Hello and welcome to the Paul Green Comedy Podcast. This is a special edition. Three specials. Not only do I have two guests, we are here at the Magic Castle in Hollywood, California, which doesn't allow videography. How are we doing this, gentlemen?
We're flaunting the law.
We are flaunting.
Magicians are naturally deceptive.
So
that's what we're doing.
So those of you following the podcast know that I have been here in Los Angeles working with The Charlatans, the world famous magic comedy improv duo. And those of you who follow me know I already had a chance to meet Bill Cott about a month ago. Dave Cox, this is the first time on the show. So glad to have you here.
Delighted to be here.
So here's what I would love to do, Dave, since we've met Bill already. I'd love you just to introduce yourself to my audience a little bit. Tell me about your life, your dreams, how you got here, all of that.
And then 20 minutes later, we'll come back.
Right.
You guys do that in sandwiches.
Do that in about 3 minutes, and then we'll talk about The Charlatans.
Oh, sure. I'll do it in less. I'm just a farm boy from Illinois who had big dreams and wanted to escape to the big city. So the best way to do that, of course, is magic. So
or football.
Or football, but look at me.
Yeah.
No, actually, I'm pretty...
Yeah, you actually are built to be a tight end, but...
I do have a very tight end. Thanks for noticing. I grew up in a little tiny coal mining and farming town and wanting to escape and live in a bigger world. And so I, you know, constantly watched Saturday Night Live on TV and just wanted to be in that world. And when I wasn't doing that, I was alone in my room practicing card tricks and stuff. So and when I was 10 years old, I decided to go professional. And
You were how old?
I was 10.
You were a professional magician since 10 years old.
That's correct.
Yeah. How much money were you pulling in at 10?
I'll tell you. I took out an ad in a local newspaper, like my local newspaper, the Gold Nugget, and I walked into the office, and with my lawn mowing money, because I had a business mowing lawns at 10, and I took out an ad, and it said, Dave Cox, boy magician, available for private parties, business affairs, and bar mitzvahs. $25.
Were there any bar mitzvahs going on in that small?
No, I don't. I honestly don't think there were any Jews within 100 miles of where I grew up. But I thought it sounded professional, you know.
Yeah.
And I knew the Marx Brothers all had bar mitzvahs. Like all the guys were like,
yeah.
So,
you knew where your bread was buttered in the entertainment industry at 10 years old. I need to get the Jewish community involved.
Yes, my bread was kosher buttered. And so I took that out and I put my parents' phone number. Didn't tell them. And I'm like, I just need to break it to them that I'm going to be a professional magician now. And then, one day the phone rang and my mom picked it up and I hear her say, hello,
what? A magician? Listen, I know the sheriff and this is harassment. If you call again. And I went, Mom, no, it's for me. It's business.
And so I took that phone call and I said, hello, this is Dave Cox, magician.
Uh-huh.
And
so I take you were still prepubescent.
Very much prepubescent, yeah. The only thing I was horny for was magic and attention.
Ooh.
And
that has not changed.
It has not changed at all, though I have added girls to it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Anyway, so I booked that show, and it was for a kid who was 12, 2 years older than me. And luckily I was tall, so I didn't look like a little kid.
Right.
But I went in and I did that show for kids that were older than me, which is amazing when you're 10.
Yeah.
And that show went incredibly well. And I was doing like, again, I was doing like voices and accents and bits from Saturday Night Live along while I was doing more magic tricks. So it was a very different kind of magic show. I was kind of trying to combine like everything I could do in one show. And that show went great. And so I just never stopped.
You're like, I might have a future here.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then eventually I raised my rates to $35 a show.
Ooh, inflation.
Big
inflation.
Deal. And my mother was like, who is going to pay you $35 for a magic show? And as it turns out, a lot of people.
Yeah.
So
even back then, that was a good price.
It was a good price. It really was. Comic books were a quarter, you know?
So Dave, just out of curiosity.
Yes.
How much do you cost now for a magic show? What's on the flyer?
What's on the flyer?
What's it going to cost to get this man doing an SNL magic show in your...
No.
You don't have to answer that.
It's not really an awkward question. It's just the magic business is weird, right? The magic business is really weird.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah, it is. Because you don't know what sort of a show you're going to be doing. Like, I do shows Like, I'll go into somebody's house and do a party for 12 people that are there for a nice, you know, 50th birthday party.
Yeah.
And the you know, the boy of honor gets to do all sorts of magic stuff. And then I'll go and do a show for 7,000 people at the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
Or I'll go, I was on Broadway and we worked for, you know, 2,000 people a night. It was crazy. So the amount of money you get paid can be anywhere from, like, don't tell anybody, but I'll still do a birthday party show because I love kids. And that's how I started performing for kids.
Yeah.
So for a kid's birthday party, I might get $500. And then that night, and this has absolutely happened, I'll go change, get my stuff in the car, and go do a $5,000 gig for a big corporate thing.
Yeah.
At an event. So
that reminds me of this Brian Regan anecdote when he was just about to break big, but he had some big gigs, and he did like a gig in Florida for $50, and then he drove up and did this gig for $5,000, and he had that moment of like, how much am I really worth?
Right.
I'm worth $50 or $5,000.
Yeah. So it's a weird thing of, like, we do magic partly because we love it. Like,
sure.
There's a love for it. And so, like, doing a show for kids is a great experience.
Right.
And it's so fun, and it's a great way to spend my afternoon.
Yeah.
So for me, like, yeah, $500 is worth going to do a show and make kids believe that anything can happen and that they have, you know, power in the world, and it's okay to be a little weird.
Yeah.
Which is kind of my base message. It's okay to be weird.
Dave Cox, children's motivational speaker. I had no idea.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
You can be whatever you want.
Say this, when you work with kids, you stay young.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's
and great. like I wouldn't know what the term skibbity was if it wasn't for working with kids. And you know.
I don't know what that means because I don't work with kids.
Well, I also picked it up from TikTok.
Yeah, oh, yeah. TikTok, sure.
So I didn't know that. That's incredible. We've only known each other 7-8 years, but we've never
right.
really talked.
Our origin story.
Yeah, we needed a podcast to really connect.
Right.
So take us from, let's do a fast forward. So you're charging $25 in Illinois to do magic
yep.
as a 10-year-old in front of 12-year-olds.
That's right.
And then give us maybe just some brief highlights how you ended up LA. And then I would love to see where Bill's story and Dave's stories converge.
Right on. Well, growing up in Illinois, I spent a lot of time going up to Chicago. And this is on the improv side, but I would get on a train and take it to Chicago, without my parents knowing. I'm just a teenage idiot. It was just like, yeah, Dad, I'm going to be out kind of late. Yeah, okay, sure.
It's just a magic trick. You disappear.
Right, exactly.
So, there you go.
So I'd get on the train in Springfield, Illinois, and take it up to Chicago, and then I would go over to Second City and see a show. And then if I saw the early show, as long as I got on the 11:40 train back, as long as I can get that train, I could get home and everything's fine.
If How long was that train ride, by the way? Just trying to get some distance
it's about
here.
2.5-3 hours.
Wow. So you're taking so 6 hours round trip
yeah.
to go see a show at Second
That's
City.
Right. Yeah.
Dedication.
Yep. I'd head up about 9:10 in the morning. And
this was just to watch a show. You're not even
right. yeah.
in there. You're not taking classes yet.
Yep.
You're not performing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just to
wow.
experience it, just to see it.
Yeah.
Because I got busted sneaking into the comedy club that we had in Springfield. And I thought because I had, you know, like a bad, like a 16-year-old mustache and a black trench coat,
yeah.
I could just go and pretend to be an adult.
Yeah.
And it worked surprisingly well because a lot of doormen at comedy clubs are not really there to get into your business.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when that blew up and they're like, wait a minute, you're 16. And I'm like, so I had to go to Chicago.
Yeah.
So so I got to know improv in Chicago. And one of the meccas of magic is Magic Inc. in Chicago. It still exists. It's celebrating 60, 70 years. It's amazing. MagicInc.com. It's great. If you want to look at some magic. So I got involved there a little bit. And then it just kept going. And I went to college and was working comedy clubs and doing stand-up. And then I started doing magic while doing stand-up. Which stand-up comics hate.
Dude,
they hate
anything that's like their skill plus more.
Right. If you walk into a comedy club like with nothing except maybe some cocaine, you're cool.
Yeah.
But if you got a guitar case or a ventriloquist dummy or
yeah.
a set of magic tricks, you're a hack and you're horrible and get the hell out
right,
of our
right.
club. And so I did it all very stealth. And I would not be introduced as a magician.
So it was even a magic trick to get into the comedy
That's
club
right.
for the so they would
yeah.
you were doing magic.
That's right.
You're yeah. like, oh look it, I have a magic kit.
Yep. I would pretend that I was making fun of magic.
Right.
And do a trick where I'm just doing some obvious bullshit, and then it would become a real magic trick, and people would be like, what?
Right.
And then I would do another one in a sort of a way. But and I was doing improv and doing interactive stuff in my stand-up. So again, like trying to like use all my skills at one time. And that led to more comedy. And then eventually, you get out of college and you're like, what am I going to do if I want to be an actor, if I want to be a writer? And I had some early success writing. So I moved to California and started working with Comedy Sports and Improv Olympic, where I taught for several years. And I auditioned and joined the Magic Castle and started performing here a couple of years later. And then started touring, going to Renaissance fairs around the world, and then touring on cruise ships and on television on Masters of Illusion and a couple of other shows. And eventually I performed on Broadway with Bela Nock in a show called Bellomania about 10 years ago. And that all led to this. And then Bill and I ended up doing a show called Opening Night, the Improvised Musical, which is a fully improvised Broadway-style musical based on audience suggestions. And we did probably 350 of those over the course of, 10 years. And then we had an opportunity to do a show here at the Magic Castle. And the guy I was going to do that show with, my buddy Bruce Gold, we had done that show before, he had another gig, and he didn't realize he was double-booked. And he had accepted that gig like a year before. And I went and I said, hey, Bruce, I notice on the poster for this huge fundraising thing, you're on it. And that's and those are two of the nights we're supposed to be performing the Magic Castle. And he's like, oh my God, I said I'd do it, but there was never a contract. I'm like, there's a poster.
So guess who wasn't on the poster?
That's right.
So I went to Jack Goldfinger, who is the director of entertainment here at the Magic Castle, an amazing guy. And he said, well, I'll try and rebook you maybe 6-8 months. And I said, can we keep? Yes, definitely do that. But can I keep that week? And he said, well, what would you do? And who would you do it with? And I proposed several other great magicians and great guys. And I said, but what I really would like to do is work with my buddy Bill Cott. It's something we've kind of like just bullshitted about a couple of times late at night, to do a vaudeville style magic show with improvisation and music and some very bad dancing and just lots of comedy and interactive stuff, something that's I've never seen before.
Yeah.
So we had like 4 weeks maybe from okay to like actually being on stage. And Jack Goldfinger said, yeah, Dave, that sounds good, but it's not the Comedy Castle. It's the Magic Castle.
Yep.
And I said, buddy, I guarantee fantastic magic, amazing comedy, just all wrapped into one. And he said, are you willing to stake your reputation on it?
Oh.
And wow. I said, absolutely. And he said, it is done. And so I called Bill. I'm like, Bill, it's happening.
Yeah.
And so we got together and we made this insane show. That's filled with all of that stuff that we love. And so we've had the opportunity to do it around the country and in Chicago and New York and New Orleans, and it's taken us some really amazing places.
Yeah,
it's one of the most fun things I do. So that's the very brief arc.
That's the brief arc.
Yeah. And meanwhile, I was doing commercials and voiceover stuff and video game narration and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But this is probably the most fun I have.
So incredible. Thank you for sharing all of that. So that's where the where you two combined, mm-hmm. So Bill, we heard a little bit about your story.
Yes.
But why don't we recap your story and then talk about how magic played into that, and then, kind of your side of this. Let's hear your side of the story. This is a this is a point counterpoint debate.
Well,
I
had fallen in love with magic at the age of 5. I saw a cups and balls routine at I think we're at a Wild West town, some little tourist trap.
Yeah.
And I saw a cups and balls routine. Maybe, but I don't think it was, because it was some more obscure place.
Yeah.
Sorry, I need to turn my phone off. I just got some sort of notification. And so
these mics won't pick that up. These are high quality podcast mics. Bill Cat.
All right.
And so I got the cups and balls, and my dad says, you know, you really need to practice. You're gonna need to practice from a mirror. And my dad really didn't do magic, but his father, my grandfather, did magic. Had, you know, like, as you know, just as an amateur, just, you know,
sure,
for fun. As did my other grandfather. So both of them, once they saw that I had an interest in magic, started like teaching me little tricks here and there.
Yeah,
things you could do with coins and, you know, wads of
the old coin behind the ear trick.
Yes, sir.
A classic.
And yeah, one of the tricks that my grandfather used to show me was, you know, you wouldn't do this in front of a kid today, but he would put a handkerchief over his hand and then take a cigarette and press it into the hand that it wouldn't burn. And that was magical to me. And then I found out, oh, you just take a 50-cent piece and put it under there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm exposing.
You revealed a magic trick.
But nobody would do this trick for a kid, and that's the only person suitable to do the trick.
You're lucky. My mom, my grandfather would just like ground out cigarettes right on my hand.
Yeah.
And then no quarter there.
Dave, this that's abuse, by the way. Thing, yeah.
And so
that's for a different podcast.
It's really fun tricks. And then for anybody out there who's asking, how can I get into magic if I'm not in the city where I can like take classes at the Magic Castle, or if, you know, if you're, you know, not in a city like Chicago where you could take classes at Magic Inc., you can go to your local library and go to 793.8 in the Dewey Decimal System, and you'll at least find one book on magic, and then some others on cards and playing chess and things like that.
Yeah.
But you can find out, and that's how I really grew my love of magic, and I learned more about magic and more about it. I could just do things with a deck of cards or whatever I could find in the house.
Yeah.
And so that's how I started doing magic. And then the first time I ever did magic in front of an audience was at a show and tell in school. You know, they
had
a show and tell. So I brought tricks that I had gotten, because every Christmas, every birthday, I would go to a magic shop and get a new, because I really wanted to do what Dave was doing, which is start performing magic at a young age. But the only opportunities I had were the show and tell, because I didn't have that initiative to go and do that. And plus, we were in a new town every year. So I moved around a lot.
Yeah.
I think, which we discussed in the other podcast. People can go back and listen to that. Click on through.
Yep.
And then later on in college, one of the reasons I got the part of the player in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead is because he has to do a couple like impromptu magic tricks, or at least that's the way the director had in his mind. And he was like, I know that you do magic. Can you do some in this show? I was like, yes. So I did a few tricks in that show. But largely it was, you know, close up magic, and something that I did at parties, and something that I did in college as a contraceptive. And I honestly took this girl I had a crush on. We went to a fraternity formal, and I took her back to my dorm room afterward. And I cracked the door open the way my mother always, you know, said, like, if you ever have a girl in your room, make sure you leave the door cracked open. So I did, even though it was a dorm room. And I had a roommate.
Right. More girls may come in if you leave the door open.
There you go.
That's the other thought. And I did magic for her. That was my post-formal action. And magic had always been something that I loved and kept in my back pocket. And then when I met Dave, I found out he was a member here at the castle, and he invited me not just to come see shows, but to come to, they have these swap meets here at the castle where you can, and I was just there a couple weekends ago with my daughter, and Dave gave my daughter a Lance Burton magic kit, which is high quality. It's probably like the highest quality magic kit that a kid can get. And thank you for that.
You're very welcome.
So hopefully she'll pick up that love. But I picked up a lot more books. I have so many books, that some of which I haven't even cracked open, that I've gotten over the years at these swap meets.
Wow. So,
yeah.
And then that's where the worlds converge. So then Dave's like,
yeah,
I have this spot. I have an idea. Bill's the guy.
Right.
You did that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was a weird like ladder. It's like Bill and I met as improvisers.
Right.
And then, oh, you also do musical improv. I do musical improv. And
right.
We did a musical improv show. And then at some point, I said, yeah, I can't do the show this week. I'm doing a show at the Magic Castle. And everybody's like, you're doing what?
Right.
And then so Bill and I are talking, oh, I'm in magic too. No way. And, oh. And we're both from the Midwest, you know, so we just had a lot in common. So the most natural guy to call if I want to do something insane like this was Bill.
Bill's the insane guy.
Mm-hmm.
Not
it's not really proven. I have letters from doctors. I travel and need my meds.
So the most important thing is, how did I get involved with you guys? How did that happen? I think that's what the people want to know.
That is what they want to know. That's, I met you through, although you saw me, you later told me you saw me on stage years ago.
Yes.
Previous to that.
So well, okay, now it's my turn.
This is my podcast,
everybody. So when I started to have the crazy idea of like, I'm going to move to L.A. because there's not enough performers moving to L.A. There's a real need there.
Right. The doors are open, everybody.
Yeah.
If you have a screenplay and a dream, get out here.
Yeah. It's
no need to zoom in.
The line to be an accountant is just around the block, but then there's this line for talented actors and nobody's there.
Nobody's in it.
So I started just kind of driving out to L.A., try to get a lay of the land, and a buddy of mine said, you need to go see opening night, the improvised musical. And so I went at the old IO West, the late IO West, unfortunately, in Hollywood. And that's when I first saw Bill Cotton. And I remembered specifically a joke that he had said that honestly didn't go over well, but not because the joke wasn't good. It's because the audience didn't get it. I think it was a back of the room joke. Yeah. And I was like, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard.
You remember what it was?
I do remember what it was. It's a little inappropriate. Eh, screw it. So I don't remember anything about the context.
Realize I'm not responsible for this being on a podcast at this point. It's something I said in an improv theater in a different day and age.
Disclaimer. Disclaimer. Disclaimer.
I never intended it to be on a podcast where people
I don't have to share the joke if you don't want.
You can go ahead and tell it, because you told the other day and I didn't remember it, because you don't remember things that you do in improv.
But it's just like
Bill Cott may or may not have said this allegedly.
I like that setup.
And again, I don't remember the context at all, but somebody said a cockroach, and then Bill just made said, no, it was a cutroach.
It's wordplay.
Just wordplay.
It's appropriate.
It was just wordplay. There was no anything other than it was just wordplay. And yeah, and I laugh really loud, and I know that, so I get really self-conscious, sure. Especially when I'm the only one. And I was like.
Right, right.
And even in character, Bill's character acknowledged that nobody got it. He's like, well, I said the joke, but it didn't go over too well, or something like that. So that's when I first saw Bill on stage, but I didn't know Bill. I just knew funny guy with opening night. And then
was I in that show?
I don't remember you. I don't think so. Man, I do believe Flo from the Progressive commercials was in that one, though.
Oh, Stephanie. Then it was.
Yes, Stephanie.
It wasn't.
So anyway, I end up moving out to L.A., and then Jay Succo, who I had met very randomly, interestingly enough, through music as well. So Dave did this improv, or excuse me, Jay did an improv festival in Phoenix that a buddy of mine put on and knew that I played improv piano, which was never really what I wanted to do. You know, I never wanted to be a piano player. It's just a skill set that I possess, kind of. And so I ended up playing piano for Jay Succo, and that's how we connected and followed on Facebook. And then when I moved out to L.A., Jay Succo reaches out and does one of those, Paul, you need to meet Bill. And I don't remember that. I think maybe even a Facebook message like grouped us and said, you two need to meet. And so I moved out to L.A. I don't know anybody. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. You know, I don't have any connections. I'm like 34. I have no credits. It's crazy that I'm even trying to do this when kids are doing this at 16, 17 and are young, hot, and talented. But anyway, so then, so Bill and I went to lunch in Pasadena, and he was incredibly gracious and just shared his wisdom and was so open. And
that took 5 minutes.
And that took 5 minutes. And then we stood and drank coffee for 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, you going to talk? Am I going to talk?
Somebody will talk.
Somebody will talk.
Paul likes to talk.
Yeah.
Someday he'll have a podcast.
Maybe. All about myself. So, but then you found out again that I played improv piano, which improv piano has opened more doors than my acting or any other ability.
It's a very specialized skill set.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys can play the piano. A lot of guys can do improv, but improvising on a piano is hard.
Yeah.
And we have, coming from musical improv and having done a bunch of different types of musical improv, there's a very small set of people in this town that can do that sort of a thing.
Right.
And we work with a lot of them and we reach out, but, you know, a lot of them are doing television or doing stuff. So it's very hard to get somebody who not only can do it, but is also fun and adaptable and improvisational.
Yeah. And luckily, I'm good at piano, but not good enough to be on.
Right.
Like, we need somebody who's good, but not that good.
Good.
We need that sweet spot of good, but available.
Right. We need a solid 9.
And
that's the sort of talent that's going to drive in from Arizona for us.
That's right.
And not get $5,000 like Davis. Man, I'm happy to get that $25. That's what you paid the other guy, right?
Yep,
that's
absolutely. Exactly right. Matter of fact, I think we're going to need a refund because things went kind of haywire this week.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I did miss that B flat.
Yes.
And the second song. So
it was B round.
Right. So anyway, so Bill had me do a couple of his improv trick music improv classes. And it's like, oh, Paul can do this thing moderately well. And then I got
moderately well.
And then I got the call that the piano player who you had been working with, who was one of those guys who's probably on television now. And
He actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually is. Yeah.
Was no longer available. And then I got the call. Can I come in and can fill in for the Charlatan show? And gosh, that was probably 7 years. Do you have an idea when that was? I think it was maybe 2016, 2017, maybe 2018, somewhere in that.
I want to say it was like 2018.
Yeah.
I want to say. Maybe it was 2017.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Somewhere around there. And then I got to just start doing this show, and it's been so much fun. I just love doing it.
Oh, thanks.
Perfect for me. I love that I get to, not only play piano, but get to contribute to the comedy. And I feel like because I have a comedic background, I'm able to be like, oh, there's a punchline coming. This is a good time to like cut out the music. And I don't know if those other piano players did that, guys. This is an opportunity for you to tell me how much better I am than all those other guys who were on TV.
One of the strengths of Paul and all good improvisational piano players is you're really part of the show. You're not just accompanying what's going on. You're really a member of the cast because we're interacting with you and we're saying and doing things that you react to and you initiate things. Like if Bill says something, well, I haven't seen you for a long time. Bum, bum, bum.
Right.
Then we know there's something serious going on.
Right.
But if, I haven't seen you in a long time. Bum, 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 bum. It's like, oh, maybe Bill and I are in love.
Yeah.
So we're reacting to the musical cues, and that has a huge effect on where the show goes and how the story goes. And in doing the Charlatans especially, it's very unusual because a big chunk of it, like 20, 25 minutes, and when we did bigger shows, in theater shows, up to 45 minutes of the show, the entire second half, was a fully improvised film noir story based on audience suggestions. And it can go in any direction. So we have a narrative to that story. And the magic is going to happen along the way. There are about 7 pieces of magic that can happen in that story, in the shorter version of it.
Yeah.
And there's usually 5. 5 of them definitely are going to hit. But the reason we do those things, where the story takes us, and why we're doing those tricks is dependent on audience suggestion and to a great deal on what the piano player is doing, whether it's ominous or lighthearted or exciting or, Irish, well, here comes my buddy now. And if you're like, I guess I'm Patty McGee.
Yes.
And I'm it. And it's that interactive thing where it develops that it's a really super exciting thing. And nobody has really done that in magic. There's a little bit in the 70s. And then a lot of it in like the 19th century,
yeah,
where they would have these weird magic plays, but they were fully written and fully constructed. But it was like a play, and a big chunk of a magician's show would be 20, 30 minutes. And it was, the witch, the sailor, and the monkey.
Right.
And it's this story about a sailor who goes to town and meets.
Oh, I love that play, The Witch, the Sailor, and the Monkey.
Yeah, it's classic stuff.
No wardrobe necessary.
But it's been like 100 years since anybody's really tried that. And we're doing that. And we're adding improv to it, and we're adding improvisational singing to it,
yeah,
and we're adding a bunch of, stupid hats.
Yeah. So I think this is a good time. Let's talk future, and let's talk dreams. So I love just talking about dreams, that whole idea of going for dreams,
yeah,
the ups, the downs,
yeah,
the reality versus what you would like reality to
sure
be, closing that gap and all of that stuff. Because,
yeah,
as you know, having a dream is one thing, everybody has them, but going for them, actually realizing, whole other thing. So to wrap up here, because we got a show to do tonight, fellas.
We sure do.
I would love just each of you to take a moment just to talk about, what kind of dreams you have for the Charlatans, for yourself, and maybe just a little bit of general advice in terms of what you've learned being a dreamer, having big ambitions, and we'll maybe give you got 3 minutes on the clock. Just kidding. Just take as much time as you want to wrap up. I would love to hear both of your thoughts on that.
Right. Partly the dreams of the charlatans are to do bigger shows, you know, to bring what we can do to people. Cause it seems very different and people seem to really, they dig it. We've got people coming back this week here at the Magic Castle over and over to see our show. It's kind of a problem. And part of that, yes, is
everybody's taking us to the prom and right. No one else. Yeah. You know.
Part of it is the show is fun and good, but also because it's improvisational, people are like, I think maybe this is all written. Like,
right.
Maybe this is all, they can't possibly have come up with that on the spot. And then when they found out that guy was a, you know, a U-Haul manager that
right.
created a whole big thing spontaneously, they must have planted that guy in the audience and said, okay, here, say you're in the U-Haul because I got a U-Haul song that I want to do and it's a big trick.
Right.
So they're coming back to prove themselves that we're actually making it up as we go along, which is exciting. But we, coming out of our initial runs of stuff, we were, we opened the New Orleans Comedy Festival. We headlined and opened that show, and then we did a run in Chicago that was sold out and got a lot of offers to bring our show to Chicago. And we were really excited about it. And we got an offer to come to Broadway. Holy crap. And we have a producer and we toured the theater and we were super excited. And that was February of 2020.
Did something happen after February 2020?
Something happened.
I think one of us got a cold.
Probably.
Yeah, it's probably I had the sniffles for 2 years.
So we were on this rocket of stuff that was happening and lots of momentum. And then the world stopped for a while. And the dream would be, I think, for me at least, is to pick that back up, which is what we're doing right now.
Yeah. I want to say that's happening all over right now. There's a New York Times article this last week of April 2024 about the reemerging improv scene in New York.
Mm.
You know, Second City finally opened up a theater in the first city.
Oh, great.
And People's Improv Theater is back, The Magnet, and a lot of other different companies. But there's finally an improv scene in New York again after the pandemic. So,
which is great.
Yeah. Bodes well for us as well.
Yeah. So hopefully later this year, we'll be in New York off Broadway.
Love it.
Doing a show.
So general just advice to anybody out there has a big dream, going for a dream. It seems impossible. Anything that you just learned in this crazy life that you live that you would like to share, expound upon?
My advice is do what you love, because this show is everything that I love in one thing. I love to sing. I love to do magic. I love to do improv. And, you know, as we've talked about, this isn't one of those, you know, $5,000 shows, but it pays so much, you know, in the soul.
Yeah.
With that. And it's led to and has led to many other things in our lives.
So the monetization comes so
even
after
even
the passion.
Before we do exactly what we want to do with this show, whether it's Broadway, Vegas, a standing thing here in Los Angeles would be great. I would love to have our own theater where we're the headlining act, and then we have other improv shows and other magic shows.
Yeah.
All those would be great. Those would be like the magic lottery. But do what you love.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely do what you love. Don't be afraid. You know, there's memento mori. We're all going to die, right? Live today. Like tomorrow may not be there.
Yeah.
And the best time to start, I know this is a cheesy thing to say, the best time to start something, yeah, it was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
The second best time to start something is today.
Right.
So take chances and figure out what you want to do and sample things, you know, especially if you're in a big city like Los Angeles, Chicago, or you know, any big city probably has somebody who is doing something that you want to do. Go watch them do it and then go figure out a way to do it too.
Yeah.
Go to an improv theater, see a show. I love that. Go take classes there. Read books and find out. And then put yourself out there. Actually do it. Don't just plan to do it. Do it. And taking those chances is the only way you're going to really, really get someplace, because nobody is going to just come pick you up and put you on a rocket to fame and then fire it off.
Right.
And say, good luck.
Yeah.
you've got to build that rocket and you've got to fuel it. And the fuel is your passion.
Yeah.
And do that. And maybe improv isn't your thing. Maybe you've always wanted to be a dental assistant and you're really passionate about that. Then go do that. Get in somebody's mouth.
Yeah. You
know? Even despite the high suicide rates.
Even
those in the dental field, it's true, more so than psychologists. But do it. Maybe you need to die.
That's a dark turn right there.
Yeah, maybe life isn't worth living. Just murder yourself. Yeah.
You could be dead tomorrow anyway. Let's get a head start.
By the way, as the kids say, and you learn things from kids, unalive yourself.
Right. Oh, you were on TikTok a bit.
Yes, I am.
But yeah, I mean, that's what it is. Make things happen for yourself.
Right.
Don't be passive. Don't just wait for life to come lay things in your lap.
Right.
Go get on that train and go do something that people say you can't do.
Right.
Go take classes when all your friends may say, no, that's kind of weird. Go be weird. Do the weird stuff.
Yeah.
People are waiting for you to say the weird thing.
That's more TikTok stuff.
I know.
Well, and I think there's a lot to that. A friend of mine just says ego is the enemy. I think this ego of like, oh, well, what if I, you know, people.
Oh, what if I fail? Right.
What if I fail? What? And it's just like, well, first of all, you will.
Yeah.
A lot.
Right.
And everybody who's ever been successful, what we don't see is just the litany of failures and shows that didn't go well. And the investments that didn't work out. And, you know,
The first time we put this show up, it was miserable.
Oh, my God.
Not at the castle.
Not at the castle.
We tried it out at Improv Olympic. The first time, we only had 7 people in the audience, first of all.
Right, we did a test.
The show is very audience interactive, so you need a crowd to really do the work. And then we still hadn't worked out the timing on a lot of things. And the improv was solid, but it's not enough to carry this show.
Yeah.
So
that was on like a Monday, and we opened, on Wednesday? So we had 3 days to really
shore it up,
sort of figure out exactly, okay, let's cut that, let's do that. That seems to go really well. Let's do that. And that version of the show, lots of that is still what we're doing today, at least for this version, for this venue.
Yeah.
But yeah, the only reason you feel weird and alone is because you're with the wrong people.
Mm.
That's it.
Get the right people.
Get the right people.
Find somebody who works in dentistry.
There you go.
Right. Everything that somebody in your family or your last girlfriend or boyfriend or those jerks at school said to you was awful and weird is the exact same thing that other people love about you and are willing to support you with and will be thrilled that you want to do those things.
Love that.
That's who you are.
Well, I love that. Thank you so much, both of you.
Oh, you're
so grateful to be a part of the Charlatans, that you allow me to come do this, that you'll actually listen to me when I have ideas. That means a lot to me. I pitch a lot of ideas and they go, yeah, Paul, we'll get right on that.
It's been a pleasure breaking the rules.
Yeah.
It certainly is.
Absolutely. So we got to get ready to do a show. The Charlatans performing tonight at the Magic Castle. But again, thank you so much, Dave Cox, Bill Cobb, the Charlatans, for coming on the Paul Green Comedy Podcast. All of you out there, hope you're going for your dreams. You're having good experiences. Be willing to get out there. Ego is the enemy. Go give it a try. If it's the weird thing, but it's in your heart, go for it. Find your people. I heard a lot of that.
Yep.
And I hope that all of you are doing well. You're having good experiences. I love you all so much. Thank you so much for tuning into the Paul Green Comedy Podcast with special guests, the Charlatans.
Thank you.
Live from the Magic Castle. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.
This was live?
I will record it tomorrow.
Because we should probably cut out some of that language, frankly.
Yeah. Well, no, it's going to go unedited, but it was not live. Thank you. I do say live a lot, and then I have to correct myself. Yeah. And by live, I mean recorded. So the opposite of live. Mm. All right, everybody. We will talk to you soon.